happy to announce that the Fretboard Journal now has three presenting sponsors. These are three brands that are behind us with everything that we do, including the podcasts and the videos, and they include Carter Vintage. Carter Vintage Guitars, where guitar lovers go for a good time. Gibson Guitars, only a Gibson is good enough. And last but not least, Martin Guitars. Martin Guitars and Strings remain the choice for musicians around the world for their unrivaled quality, craftsmanship, and tone. Can't thank these three brands enough for being presenting sponsors. Thank you, guys. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm Jason Burgundy, editor of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And as always, that is John Rauhaus playing in the background. Today on the podcast, I'm talking to my dear friend, Elizabeth Jane Henderson. She is a guitar maker. You may or may not know about her. She's appeared in the Fretboard Journal before, and she's truly one of my favorite people. So this is a great conversation. Jane started building guitars and ukuleles as a way to pay off her law school loans. It was also a way to build a bond with her dad, who happens to be one of the most famous solo luthiers around, acoustic guitar and mandolin maker Wayne Henderson. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably know about Wayne's work. It's been captured in our pages numerous times over the years. I think most recently with our current mandolin orange cover story. I think Andrew Marlin has one of his Henderson F5 mandolins on display in that story. He also was, of course, famously chronicled in the book Clapton's Guitar, written by Alan St. John, which I highly recommend. Wayne builds his guitars in a very unique way in the tiny hamlet of Rugby, Virginia. And what's crazy about Wayne is his instruments typically fetch mid five-figure amounts. I'm talking 20, 30 grand for a guitar in the used market. And I say used market because ordering a guitar straight from Wayne is pretty crazy making. He has no wait list. He has no website. Wayne doesn't really take deposits. You either win one at his annual music festival by playing exceptionally well and winning the guitar contest, or you patiently wait it out. You try to give Wayne gifts. You try to work out a trade. Maybe you show up in Rugby a lot and offer him gifts or try starting a guitar and he helps you finish it. It's kind of a crazy process. It's counter to everybody else who's in this business that I've met. But it adds to his charm. Jane observed all this throughout her life. She reached out to her dad. She actually began blogging about the experience on a very cool blog that's called The Luthier's Apprentice that is still up and running. And now she's taking that education and several years later is building guitars and ukes full-time by herself out of her home in Asheville, North Carolina. She still works a little bit alongside her dad, as you'll hear. But unlike her dad, Jane doesn't really stick to Martin's old Brazilian rosewood and spruce formula. She's got a very interesting take on custom guitar making, on using sustainable woods and music. I hope you enjoy our conversation. I had a blast talking to Jane. I'm so glad that she could make the pit stop here at the Fretboard Journal before delivering a guitar to one of her clients. Before we get to that, a short request for all of you out there who enjoy the Fretboard Journal podcast every week. Maybe you tune into the Truth About Vintage Amps podcast as well, or the Luthier on Luthier podcast. If you've been liking or loving what we are up to, if we've turned you on to a cool maker or a cool musician over the years, I would love your support. And the easiest and cheapest way to be a part of the Fretboard Journal tribe is by getting one of our new digital subscriptions. With your subscription, you'll get 5 issues of the Fretboard Journal delivered to your mailbox in PDF form for just $30 for the year. And over that year, you're going to have about 500 pages of pure editorial to educate and entertain you, filled with oral histories, interviews with luthiers, interviews with players about their gear, and a lot more. I know how many people listen to this podcast. We can see the numbers. There are a ton of you out there. And if even 1,000 of you, which is a relatively small portion, decided to do a digital subscription for the year to support what we're all about, it would go a huge way to helping us grow this company, get better gear, do more in-person podcasts and fewer Skype podcasts, and a lot more. We have a lot planned, so I hope you guys will support us. You can go to fretboardjournal.com/digital to get one of those digital subscriptions, and I cannot thank you enough if you decide to do that. I also want to thank Mono Cases for sponsoring a big chunk of what we do here at the Fretboard Journal. They sponsor our crazy expensive cardboard mailers that every print subscriber gets. They sponsor a lot of our other efforts. I am rocking personally the Mono Vertigo case, which I think is pretty much the perfect gig bag for my Telecaster and I. It has all the right pockets. It's super protective. I don't worry about my guitar at all when it's in there. So go to monocreators.com. You can see their entire line. They also have pedal boards, which I imagine will be the next thing I obsess over. But for now, I'm happy with the gig bag. Monocreators.com. We have a ton going on behind the scenes here in Seattle as well. We have a bunch of new videos. We're working on our electric guitar annual for 2019. We'll have a pre-order link for that very soon. Issue 45 is just around the corner. Some of the videos we're working on, Bill Frizzell, Kenny and Amanda Smith, a bunch more. I'm super excited to be able to share all these. So keep the feedback coming. Stay tuned. Keep following us on Instagram. And again, thanks for following us. And if you do decide to be a part of our family, thank you for becoming a digital subscriber. It means a lot. All right, enough rambling. Here is my talk with Jane Henderson. I hope you like it. I had a blast talking to her. Hey, Jane, thanks for being here at the Prep War Journal.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so absolutely thrilled to be here and to see Seattle and see this amazing
You took the 11 a.m. Prep World Journal tour. It's just winding up, winding down now.
It took so long. It was amazing, though. I got to see so many things. There's all these four corners. So much. It was great.
Yeah.
Really.
So we're happy to have you here. You're usually, obviously, in Asheville, right?
Yep. And, in Asheville.
And you came here to hand deliver a guitar to someone. We don't need to mention him, but talk to me about this guitar because it's gorgeous.
Well, thank you. I like to deliver things sometimes, especially if it's somewhere, you know, that I really want to go.
Yeah.
And it cuts down just on my anxiety and their anxiety of shipping. I don't want to ship it if I can help it. So, if it's somewhere super amazing like Seattle, I can go see you and deliver a guitar. So this guitar is a Singolo slot head 41-ish, something along those lines. I just, you know, I don't really go by exact style numbers or anything, but I did inlay, and this had a special custom inlay. The guy, one thing that is my favorite part, I think, is being able to draw out people's personalities and put it on their guitar for them and make exactly the guitar that I see from when I spend time with them or talk to them. And this guy who ordered this guitar, I don't know him. And hopefully this is what he wants. But I think after talking to him, I like to know people. And that's a fun thing for me, is to kind of get to know somebody and have a relationship with my clients. It just matters a lot. And this one, he wanted something viney, something, you know, not run of the mill. And so I came up with it was sort of an asymmetrical, I don't really know how to explain it, a vine, but without a bunch of leaves, without a bunch of accoutrements. It's just a vine that twists up the fingerboard on one side and then kind of moves over to the other and into the headstock. And I wanted to do that. And I asked him, you send a message, is this okay? But I wanted to do something that would be sort of straightforward, but also have that extra bling, because that's what I saw in him when I spoke to him. And so, yeah, that's the inlay on that is, it's just sort of a custom. And then I also inlaid his tattoo that he has, that he said he wanted to make it a little more custom, a little more special. So, he just emailed me a picture of his arm. Okay, cool.
And where do you inlay that?
I inlaid that. That's, I usually do more custom special things on the back of the headstock or on the heel cap, so that you can kind of keep that to yourself.
Yeah.
That's not going to be the first thing people are going to see. And then the wood actually from this is from my friend Edmund in Hawaii. He lives in Maui, and he sent me this. And my husband, Nick, and I went to teach an inlay class last year on Maui with Edmund, and he drove us on the road to Hana. And I thought, I mean, I'm 100% going to barf, but he would like stop and like lurch to a stop every, 100 feet or something and point out in the green, you know, lush woods and say, you see right over there? Yeah, that's where I cut some koa last time. Yeah, I cut some in 1972. I cut some right there. I'm like, okay, great. When can I get out and puke? But it was super cool because he is native Hawaiian and told me amazing stories. And yeah, so, but he has all this wood. He's like the Wayne Henderson of Maui, I guess,
yeah.
Because his shop is just as cluttered, just as full of, you know, floor to ceiling stuff.
Wow.
And yeah, but he was like, here's some koa I cut. And then I also made, I guess this is a whole nother thing. It's a different tangent of a story.
Go for it.
Okay. But Edmund sent me some silver oak, which is, it's like lacewood. Have you heard of lacewood? So in Hawaii, it's called silver oak.
Okay.
And so I guess it's an oak type of tree. I don't know the science. Anyway. But yeah, he sent me that. And I made this really cool tenor ukulele out of it. And I absolutely, it was my favorite one I've ever made.
Nice.
And it's hard for me to say that because pretty much everyone's my favorite. But that one really stood out. And it also had a similar inlay to, like this one. It had morning glories going up one side and then kind of curling around.
Nice.
But yeah, that silver oak, I mentioned it. And he goes, oh, yeah. I was helping clear out my neighbor's yard. And I just cut that down out of his yard and just thought I'd make something with it. Glad you like it. You know, it's just like, oh, my God. Like,
yeah.
Just wherever. He just gets it from where it comes.
You need those people in your
life.
Yeah.
And he's an excellent friend. And I'm thrilled to know him and to, you know, get to. And also, we've been trading. So he and my other friend, Paul, on Kauai, who hosted me the first year I went, he just sent me a random email and, you know, hey, I was listening to you, heard you on NPR, and my family is somewhere from North Carolina, sticks back in there, whatever. Would you mind, you know, if I paid for you to come out to Hawaii and stay at my house and you could rent my car for 8 days or, you know, just drive it wherever, we'll send you places, but would you teach me and my friends some inlay for two of those days in February? I'm like, where's the trick in this?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, sure. Yeah. And so I met him, and then he sent me beautiful sets of koa because he gets it easy, and I sent him spruce, red spruce, because they can't get it as easily. So it's a pretty nice relationship that I have made with these guys.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I get to like trade this wood. So yeah, I got the koa for this guitar that we have here.
Wow. So I think hopefully every Fretboard Journal reader knows your story, a little bit of your backstory, and you know, in an effort to get close to your dad, you sort of learned from one of the greatest luthiers around, Wayne Henderson.
Yep.
How
that was an accident. I mean, if you'd made toilet bowls, that's what I would have made.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
where did your yearning to learn about inlay come from? Was that also from?
I've always wanted to do that. I'm a girl. Mm. I like sparkly things. It's just a thing that I like. And I've always been drawn to that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was little, I didn't have a relationship with him, with my dad, very much at all. I just, you know, I would come in, look at the shop, stand in line with everybody else, you know, and then kind of say, eh, and then go and sit by myself somewhere. But if there were ever a time that he didn't have a bunch of people, there wasn't a big crowd, you know, I'd like creep in the shop and say, you know, can you help me make something? What can we make? And I used to make boxes.
Mm-hmm.
I would, you know, I'd have him help me make a box, and it would be, he enjoyed the challenge of it, I think. So we'd do like the, whatever those joints that like the Lincoln Log type joint,
sure,
dovetails too. I mean, he would get all into that. And then I would just like, well, can I put something sparkly on it? How about this shiny pearl from this, you know, random box that I think came from some old factory in Brooklyn or something, you know, but I would dig through that box and just, you know, covet all these shiny pieces. And so I asked if I could do that, and he showed me how, and I did an atrociously bad job at it. I mean, I was 8, you know, but, yeah, that's how I got into it. I just always wanted to and liked. But he didn't share with me the second part of that, of the process where you inlay a hole and then stick it in.
Oh.
I just cut it and then like was trying to use a knife to like gouge out a hole because I did not realize that you used a router for that. Or like maybe he just wouldn't, I don't know. I maybe didn't know which one would be less, you know, traumatizing if I hurt myself, a knife or a router. But
sure.
Yeah, so I just have always been drawn to the sparkly.
Yeah.
And then my mom is an incredibly good artist as well and musician.
Mm-hmm.
And she always encouraged me to make things. I mean, in our house, we were making something, and, you know, beads or paintings or, you know, pizza, whatever it was.
Yeah.
We'd always start from scratch. And I've never understood, or I've, I mean, I've just, I've, it's never been something weird to me, like that you just make it.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? But yeah, so I've always want. I love working with my hands and creating, making sparkly things. So it worked out pretty well. I get to draw whatever I want and then stuff it into a guitar.
Yeah. And was your dad much of a, when you finally realized, like, I want to do inlay or I want to take this up a notch, was he a good teacher or did you have to go find other teachers?
Actually, his method is the worst.
Okay.
So when I was trying to do it, he has this little clamp that sits up on the side of his inlay bench that has a foot-shaped little pedal, and you push it and it clamps down and holds the pearl vertical, so you have to saw with your arm up.
Awkward.
It's so awkward. And my mom would always say, oh, you need to get a bench pen, you need to do it this way. And I was like, nah, I gotta do how my dad does. Yeah. You know, but then Dave Nichols from New York, he's a sort of a big deal in the inlay business. Everybody, you know, would get him to cut all their inlays and stuff for his employees or whoever it was. But he came to the shop one day and he looked at, took one look at my dad's contraption. He goes, nobody can cut inlay like that. You know, like New Yorker, like loud and boisterous. Like, no, that's terrible. That's awful. Like, I mean, somebody obviously can do it okay. I mean, look at his guitars. Like, he can do it, but I can't. So he showed me, he cut me a different bench pin that wasn't the kind that opens out, but it makes it, you know, you can maneuver pretty easily. And
got it.
Yeah, so he showed me, and then after that I was like, oh, this is way easier. And then and got a lot better at it, and then just kept practicing. And that's one of those things where playing, I don't enjoy the challenge. I'd like to just be good at it. And so I'm like, ugh, this is so hard, and then I stopped doing it. Versus the inlay, where I love that challenge so much that I just sit there all day and make sure. I'm like, no, this is not going to beat me. Like, I'm going to do this crazy design, whatever I've come up with. I'm going to do it, you know, no matter how many pieces I cut or how many times I have to glue my finger back together or whatever after I hit it with my tiny jeweler saw, you know. But yeah, so it's just, I don't want to, I love the challenge. I don't want to let it.
Yeah.
You know, take me down.
Yeah, I mean, usually guitar makers, aside from like Grit Laskin, but like Kathy Wingard has Jimmy,
and right?
People go to Larry Robinson.
I wish I had Jimmy. I mean,
people go to Larry Robinson for, but it's rare that a builder actually wants to dive into that.
Yeah, I guess. Well, and but it's because I think because I come at it at such an odd angle.
Yeah,
I'm not. You know, I think a lot of builders, I would assume, are saying, well, I would like to have a guitar to play. Let me try and make one, because whatever reason, I can't afford it. I, you know, I want to have the specific thing, whatever it is. And I'm just like, I want to hang out with my dad.
Yeah.
And I love art, you know? So those are my two driving forces. I want to make something incredibly beautiful. I'm lucky having the parents that I do and growing up the way I did, that I can hear how things are supposed to sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I can, you know, my fingers work well enough that I can play all the notes and make sure it works. But I don't have that. The music and the playing isn't my drive as much. It's the, I want to make something beautiful for somebody else to make the beautiful sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I want it to be something that means something to them and that is a part of them. And so that's where I come at it. And that's why, yeah, maybe why I want to do the inlay when nobody else is super into it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And you were building for a while. At least some of the stuff was you were doing in Rugby, right? And then you, with your dad, and then you now are like fully operational, self-sustaining, right?
Pretty
and,
much. So there's when he has his shop is dirtier.
His shop is messy.
Yeah, if you come to my shop, it's very clean. I work really hard to vacuum between each thing and to put everything back. You would be amazed at how much my dad always goes, oh, well, how do you get anything done if you're always vacuuming? I'm like, well, I'm spending the time that I normally spend in your shop trying to find something. That's the time I vacuum and put my stuff away.
Yeah.
Anyway, it works out great. But I do the sort of the messier things still at his shop. I use his thickness sander, which is super big and uses a lot of power.
Yeah.
And would take up too much space in my shop and is very expensive also.
Yeah.
And so I use that. So I sort of make myself a kit before I go. I pick the wood. Also, he has an entire room devoted for wood. I don't, you know, I don't have the space for that either. I've got a shelf.
Yeah.
So I go, I use his huge resaw and cut, you know, guitar sets out of whatever boards that I've scavenged or found or whatever. I bring up there and leave them until I need it. But then, so I pull down those sets. I do the thickness sanding and glue stuff together. He has a jig that I like. Mm-hmm. I could just make one. That's another thing that I used to feel, I don't know, trapped by the stuff he has, his jigs that people have brought him and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I kept asking. He has this clamp that clamps the guitar in, holds it really well. And I couldn't find one. So I'm like, why? And I kept asking his friends who made them, like, can't you make me one? Please make me one that fits a ukulele. Nobody will make me one that fits, I need one that sizes all the way down to a ukulele, and no one would do it. And so I decided, I'm going to make it my damn self. Yeah. And I did. And I'm really proud of myself. I figured it out. I looked at his a little bit and I thought, no, okay, so I need mine to do this other thing. I need it to adjust all the way up, to the, 12 inches or however long that a tenor or a soprano ukulele. And so I made it. And so now that I realize that I have that power,
I'm
like, wait a second, I don't have to have all his stuff. I can do it. And so I've been doing that where I just take a day and make my own jigs or something that's going to work well for me. And so I do the initial stuff at his just because I like that jig and I haven't gotten around to make one yet.
Yep.
And he has a couple of those big machines that I have no interest. They're there. I get to see my dad I go up for 4 days or something and get to see him. And that matters,
Yeah.
But, and then I do the finish work also. But everything else I do at home.
Yeah.
But I just feel like my neighbor wouldn't love the, shooting the finish out the back door. And I bet, Asheville, Buncombe County, environmental, rules probably apply.
Things are a little more lax over
a little. Yeah. I mean, the cow down the street might pass out or something, but other than that, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
So, not to get into an entire environmental.
No, I was going to go there anyways. I was going to go there anyways because you mentioned, we talked about koa, but you mentioned some other woods that are domestic in our conversation. And tell me where you're at with woods right now and what your philosophy is. And if a customer wants a Brazilian rosewood, do you just hang up on them?
No.
Okay.
Well, okay. So here's how I feel. I spent a lot of money on environmental law school.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like I can't just ignore it. And I'm proud of what I learned there. It was a great experience, a great school. I'm proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, and this is the way that I can do it. Writing grants was not my cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard and not having the evidence of what I've gotten to do in the whole day, whereas guitar, I can say, look what I did today. I made this, And so I try and at least gently push people to see a different way. They don't, because everyone's, oh, well, Brazilian's the only thing you can have. And it's not true. To me, it's not true. And so I don't want to tell anyone that they're wrong because they're not, you can believe what you want, but I just want to tell you, here's what I have found and go ahead and try. I made this guitar that Doc Watson graciously gave me by passing away. It's a bummer that he didn't get that guitar that he knew I was making it and I asked him if I could make it out of oak.
Yeah.
And I, wish that he had gotten it. But if he hadn't passed away 5 days before I got it done, but I like to think of it, he gave me a guitar because I wouldn't have one.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have that one to show.
Yeah.
And people love that one. I mean, there's something a little extra special in it, but all of the oak guitars I've made are really great. And I think so much of it is I have taken what my dad has taught me
mm-hmm.
and what Martin has pioneered, how to make this amazing guitar with scalloped braces and, measured how they used to back in the, 30s, 40s, whatever. And then put my own spin on it. I like to use wood that you might not think about. And if you listen to it, all you have to do is tap on it and hear it. And if it sounds, has that resonance that Brazilian or other ones would have, then why shouldn't I be able to make a guitar with it? And so that's what I got started, why I even got started thinking I might be able to use sustainable wood.
Mm-hmm.
And that guitar that I made for Doc, that was the first one that I made with my own wood that I bought mm-hmm. for myself. Because I knew it was quarter sawn. I was like, okay, I'm at the wood store. I know the grain's going up and down. I know that I've got it right. And I called my dad and was like, can I buy this? Can I make a guitar out of oak? I mean, it's cool. It's pretty. And, yeah. and it's quarter sawn. And I know that it is, you know, and he goes, well, I don't know. We could try it, you know? And so he cut it up and we tapped on it and it sounded so close to Brazilian that he just thought, well, it's not going to hurt to try.
Yeah.
And so I kept doing it and just my philosophy is just keep an open mind about it.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to have these resources forever, especially if we're not careful about them. And I think the Brazilian rosewood is a pretty stark evidence of that. I mean, you can't find it. And so we have some that has been repurposed or has come from the Martin factory or has come from somewhere more legal than most. Still, I'm not, you know, but I just don't.
A gray area with some of this.
Yeah. And so if it has CITES papers, I'll use it. I'd prefer not to just because I want to push how I feel. You know, I want to push being open-minded. But yeah, if someone sends me a message and says, I have my heart set on this and they pay me, I mean, okay.
Yeah.
Like I'll do it, but I just want, I would want to have a conversation about it first and to understand why they want it so bad. And you know, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
So no, I won't hang up on him.
Okay. didn't John Arnold make a famous oak guitar?
Yeah, he did. And okay. And that's one, a cool thing is that he's been one of my bigger supporters.
Okay.
Where he wrote this big long thing on one of those forums just about how good it sounded. He came and played that oak guitar I made for Doc and it was so nice. He is I didn't know him. He doesn't say much, so I never know what he really thinks.
Many words.
No. But he was so kind when he wrote this big long thing and I was so honored and humbled that he even took the time to say anything and play it for as long as he did. He played it for an hour or two and it was just so nice of him. Yeah. But yeah, but obviously it's like if he likes it, you know, he knows what he's doing and he knows how to make a good guitar out of oak and he knows that it's a thing that can happen.
Yeah. Are there tricks to making an oak guitar sound as good as it can sound? I mean, do you have to vary much from what you would do bracing wise or thickness wise from Brazilian or any of the other woods?
Well, so I think one of the biggest lessons and why my guitars or my dad's guitars or other small builders sound as good as they do is because we listen to each piece of wood and manipulate that and the bracing for the piece of wood, not just the type. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, even in the types of oak that there are, types of maple or walnut or whatever, you're still going to be tapping on it and that one might be a little more dense than this one. And I think you just have to treat each piece as its own thing. Mm-hmm. So some of them you might want to sand a little bit less or keep it, you know, as thick as you can. But if you have to get it a little, you know, some of the Brazilian especially, you have to get it thin. Mm-hmm. But it can handle it because it's so dense and has so much resilience, I guess, when it comes to, well, not really. It splinters a lot. And that's the only reason I don't like to use it because it's a bit temperamental.
Sure.
But yeah, you just have to treat each piece.
Yeah.
I think the way you.
And oak is like a tree that, I mean, everyone and their brother knows of an oak tree in their neighborhood.
Right.
Are all oak trees created equal? Are there some, are you getting them from a particular region or how do you even choose what you're grabbing?
I mean, that's a super good question. A lot of what I do when I go to search for wood, I have a couple of my little haunts where I've got folks who know what I like and sort of keep them, you know, pull them out for me if they see them in a stack that comes in. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, I start with how it looks. And I think, okay, that has some crazy, interesting figure that I never see. I'll try that. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, and then you tap on it. But they're not created equal. And I've done mostly white oak.
Okay.
But I think I've done one red oak that has this really cool curl. And somebody just happened to cut up this piece and was making firewood, but noticed it had curl and drove it up to my dad's house because they thought maybe he could use it.
Yeah.
And so I did. You know, because he goes, I don't know if I could do it. But I think he might have made one. He did. He made one for a woman in Australia with that, I think. Yeah. Okay. Put a kiwi on it.
Yeah.
Those birds. Anyway, when he said he put a kiwi on it, I was like, where'd you get some, you know, pearl that was ugly green. Like, what? He goes, oh, no, no, it's a little bird. So it's a whole nother side. You can cut that out. A
couple of kiwis. No, we won't. We leave everything in. And have you played around with any other, like, of the domestic alternative woods or whatever they're called?
Walnut is my favorite.
Okay.
But it's, I don't think it's as controversial or as, you know, odd seeming, but yeah. I love walnut. It always, it sounds, it has a similar density, I feel like, in tonal value as maybe as mahogany. So it's real bright and really just lovely. I love the sound of it. And my dad also says that if he had his choice of any wood, he would use walnut. And it's just a nice, easy bending. It doesn't smell good. I do not, you have to wear a mask. It's, I hear it's toxic, so I don't like using it, like manipulating it. I don't like that part of it.
Sure.
Because it definitely makes me choke, but it's better than cocobolo, so.
Yeah. Any like black locust or any of those weird ones that people talk about or no?
I haven't tried. Yeah. People have asked.
Yeah.
I just kind of, if I came across some, I certainly wouldn't negate it. I wouldn't say no thanks. You know, it's just one if there's something that I see that's special or that looks cool, then I'm happy to try it. And I have people who send me messages and say, hey, what do you think of this? Or I have this set of wood that I'm really excited about. Would you use it? And I'd never agree until I see it. I'm like, well, I would have to see it and hear it. Most importantly, I just want to know that it, you know, has the qualities to make a guitar that's going to sound really good and special. But honestly, a lot of it is the top.
Yeah.
So I feel like so much of it, if you get a nice red spruce or Carpathian spruce top.
Yeah.
Or Sitka, or I don't want to be a.
Yeah, an East Coast snob.
Yeah, I don't want to be a spruce snob, but.
Where are you getting red spruce from?
That guy, Dean Hill.
Okay.
And John Arnold has given me. So one of the coolest things is that one of their trees that they cut, the Hampton brothers and John Arnold went and cut from Mount Mitchell, which is right by our house. Both of us, he lives in Tennessee, but both of us are pretty close to this this 300-year-old old growth tree. And I think it fell. And so they cut it and milled, I don't know how many sets from this tree.
Yeah.
But then they got to the top of the tree where they couldn't really sell them because they were too small for too small for dreadnoughts and OMs. But I make single O's and double O's a lot and ukuleles. So they just kind of passed it on to me because, like, well, who else is going to want them?
Yeah.
So.
There's a fly in here.
That's cool.
And anyone who hasn't seen it yet, I've probably mentioned it like a half dozen times, but the YouTube video of the Hampton brothers cutting spruce in with no shoes needs to be seen. It's on YouTube.
How do they still have their feet?
Have you seen their feet? Have you been up close to them?
I have, but I've always felt awkward of, you know, like putting my face down there. But I've always wanted to ask. I think I've mentioned it sort of in passing, like, what's happening over there? But they just usually laugh at me. So
that'd be a good video series. We'll have you take them out for pedicures after they cut a bunch of red spruce. And we'll film it. It'll be great.
Okay.
You
sounds amazing.
You can interview them. Where did the uke thing come from? I know your dad's made a few, I think, right?
Yeah. He made a few. He just had patterns around, so I would see the patterns. But the main thing is that I'm a small person, and my hand is this big. You know, I'm holding it up, and it's not big. So just imagine a little girl's hand. Anyway, and I have this many fingers. I have four fingers to put on four strings, which I can do.
Yeah.
So I like that aspect of it. But the reason I started trying to make them is because they're small. And the other thing that I like about that's a whole nother thing I'll go into if you really want, but
the pronunciation.
Yes.
I just sound like a poser.
Me
if
too.
I say it,
That's
so
why
I won't do it. I'm
me
trying
too.
To respect the Hawaiian culture me by too. Not saying it.
But I feel like it's the same as like, I don't say like, I'm going to Paris today. You know, it's like,
I know.
So I just always feel bad, but I have Paul corrected me. He goes, now we need to talk about how you say ukulele. I'm like, do we though? I understand that it's a different thing, but anyway. But yeah, I just say ukulele. Anyway, so I got into trying new woods. You can use, because it takes a lot of, you can use scraps.
Yeah.
And that's, I really like the appeal of that. I mean, it just feels nice to be able to use, and I have a bunch of Brazilian rosewood ones because I just use the extras from my dad's guitars that were going to be burned. You know, there's all these pieces that just don't quite make something. And that's another part of, you know, environmentalism that I'd like to promote and help people to think, you know, we don't have to throw that away.
Yeah.
I can still make something really cool, even though it's little.
Yeah.
So that's why. And then I just love playing them. They're so happy.
Yeah.
And they're nicer and easier to play. Nylon strings don't hurt so bad.
Yeah.
There's lots of pluses, I feel like.
So when you were trying to get your guitar chops, like you've got, your dad has quite a vintage Martin, another guitar collection.
Yep.
And the bracing is known. You're going to, you know, at least if you were trying to emulate Martin, that's widely circulated. What kind of ukulele are you trying to emulate, or have you just gone out on your own, or what are you doing bracing wise?
I do Martin a lot. I just always, because of my dad, I appreciate their ingenuity and their work. And so we have a couple of really old ones that we've, you know, taken measurements and felt underneath and put mirrors in and checked, and they're usually ladder braced. I made a baritone recently that was, I didn't really know how it should be, but I made just a little tiny X brace, like cute little thing, and measured it, and I don't know, it sounded really good. So that's how I did it. I didn't really use a pattern for that. And then there's been a couple of times with the X, or with the ladder brace and then the bridge plate, where my first few sort of sunk like right before the bridge, just because of that tension. And so I've started bracing, adding some more braces up by the bridge to hold that a little bit better, because we just didn't know. So that's why I just kind of eyeball it usually and think and tap on it and say, okay, well, that's pretty good. But yeah, it's, I don't know if it's, if I'm copying someone else's bracing or not, but it's not very, it's very straightforward. I like that about them too, is that there's not a lot of stuff going on. They just have, I just ladder brace them usually, or sometimes I'll do a little X brace if I'm feeling like I want to get into the table saw a little extra.
And what's your output, guitars versus ukuleles right now?
It's about the same. I'm a little bit more on guitars just because I have more of an interest, or just more people really want them and are really itching to get them versus the ukulele. People, I don't know, maybe it's a personality thing, but then they say, hey, I want one, but whenever, you know. And so they don't push me as hard.
Just laid back ukulele people.
Yeah, maybe that's
so
it.
Happy.
Yeah, so happy.
Yeah.
So that's, they're like, yeah, I want it. But, and then I make a lot of spec ukuleles. And so if you look on my Facebook page, I have, you know, you'll see me working on them. I'll post progress pictures, and then you can, you're welcome to, you know, grab it, snap it up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and a lot of those are for if I want to try a new wood, like that silver oak or whatever that I, you know, no one's really asked me for, but I have this beautiful piece that I just cannot wait to use. And then I just say, here, you want it? I wanted to try this super crazy inlay. Here you go. You know.
How do you figure out pricing?
It depends on, I have sort of a pretty, like a base of, you know, like sopranos start at like 1,000 and tenors at 2,000, something like that. And then it goes up by the type, just how much work it is.
Yeah.
You know, if I spend more hours doing it, then it's going to cost more. Or if I'm going to sunburst the whole thing. Yeah. I did do sort of a Nick Lucas inspired ukulele. It was nice. Full body maple, and I bursted every side of it, which was so cool. It was my favorite.
Was it deeper too?
Yep. It was deeper.
Wow.
It was a big old fat one.
Is that
one.
A spec one?
Yeah.
Oh man. Yep. What did that sell for?
It was a while ago. I think it was like 32.
Yeah.
So I probably might have raised my prices since then,
all right.
But still not that much. I mean, and when you look at the actual market of handmade ukuleles that sound really good, I'm not up there with like the big guns, you know.
Yeah.
I still feel like it costs, because I have to, I live in Asheville, I have to pay my mortgage.
Sure.
But I don't feel like I'm like, you know, some of the ones that are like in the $20,000 range, I'm like, good Lord.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I'm worth that yet.
Yeah. Who's doing that?
Not ukuleles,
oh,
just
guitars. Yeah. Your dad has a, I guess you could say, infamous way of, or there's really no way to order a guitar from him.
Right.
As many have found out. Many have reached out to us thinking we have some secret
Me too.
Method.
Mm-hmm.
How do folks order from you? What's your wait list like? Like, I'm guessing you're a little more organized than Wayne.
I am a little bit more organized than him, for sure, because I know how to turn on a computer. That helps.
Okay.
So I have an Excel sheet.
Yeah.
And so when people ask me, I note the date, like when they ordered it, what they want, where they live, just so that I know, mm-hmm. because I like to make my build lists so that I can make them in conjunction with the type of humidity where they'll be living. So if it's really high humidity, like in Seattle, I will make it in, you know, summer versus, because one, I made a guitar for Mark, for our friend Mark, who, I made it in March.
Okay.
When it was very dry, and I sent it out here and with hide glue, which it was not happy, and one of the braces came loose. So ever since then, I've been like, nope, I 1,000% will make sure that I know where the person lives, and we'll make it just to cut down on the chance, you know, hopefully they'll know to keep a hygrometer and humidify or dehumidify as necessary. But it's not in my hands anymore once they go live at their house, you know. So I just try and give them a leg up, you know. So back to my list, that's why I list that.
Yeah.
And note what they want or what kind of wood. And so some of it is I go through and say, okay, I've got this chunk of people. Ooh, I'm really excited. Or I just think I really want to make a 4-0 today. Who's wanting one of those? Oh, contact that guy. You know, it works like that some. But I've sort of run into a problem where I get ready to do it, and it's been 3 or 4 years, and I send an email and the email doesn't exist anymore, or they just don't answer or whatnot. And so I have decided to change my method a little bit, where every year I start sort of make a build list where I tentatively pencil in 12 orders where things that I can get done this year. And if I do it that way, you know, and then I schedule it for the humidity and whatnot. And if I do it that way, then whoever is really wanting it can get it. So if you contact me at the end of the year when I'm getting that build list together, still contact me whenever you want your guitar so that I can add your, you know, whatever you want, your order to my Excel sheet. But then if you want it, send me a message in December. And if, you know, first priority goes to people who've been waiting for the longest, but if I don't hear from them, then if you really want it and I've heard from you and you've sent me messages every year for 3 years, then I'll get on it.
Yeah.
You know, so at least that way I feel more comfortable where I'm not making something for somebody who doesn't really care that much.
Sure.
Versus somebody who really, and I get that for my dad. That's one thing where I would always get on to him and say, Daddy, you know, these nice, polite people are waiting, and then this douchebag comes up and is so loud and annoying, and you make him something and you made him another one, like, what? And, you know, he goes, yeah, but I know they really want it. And also they annoy me, and that makes them go away usually, you know. But it's a twofold, but I get it, where the squeaky wheel gets the oil, whatever it is, you know. I get that now a little bit better, because I want to make something for somebody who just is so excited.
Yeah.
Versus somebody who asked for it 20 years ago. Well, now for
with
me,
their old AOL 5 years address. It doesn't work.
And I sent an email earlier this year, and it came back, this person doesn't work here anymore. That's awkward. Wish he had told me, but I don't know. I mean, I understand that once you order a guitar, you kind of, you know, and also things change. Half the time people say, oh, you know, I can't afford it now, or oh, I've found something else, or whatever it is. And so this way it's giving the people on my list more of a responsibility to stay in touch so that I know that you do really want it.
Yeah. And you said 12, maybe you're just tossing that number out. Is that about what you're averaging a year?
Or yeah. 12? It depends, but 12 is a low number, because I also throw some spec in too.
Okay.
So if you keep an eye on my list, or not my list, my email, like send me an email.
Yeah.
If you check on my Facebook page or Instagram, I've been enjoying Instagram more, but I don't have as many followers as I do on the Facebook. So, but it's a quick and easy way for me to reach people all at once and say, hey, I've got this going on if you want it.
Yeah.
And so keep an eye there, and it's anybody can have it. You know, then you don't have to wait. If you want it right now, and it's up your alley, you want, because most of those are just something I can't wait to make, or I'm just really itching to make a whatever it is.
Yeah. What are you dying to make right now?
Well, right now I actually am making a spec right now, which okay. Unfortunately, once you put this, probably it won't be one anymore.
Oh.
But I'm, because I haven't told anybody about it.
All right. But it's breaking news.
Yeah. It's another beautiful set of Koa.
Okay.
It's just a simple, it's just an OM28 yeah. Sunburst, I think. I want to sunburst it.
Okay.
But yeah, I just want it to be sort of straightforward, just really beautiful. Yeah. And sunburst is one of my favorite things too. I think with the sparkles and the shading, those yeah. are just sort of the things I like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it won't be as that Koa on the guitar I brought here is really wild, like crinkled up velvet.
Yeah.
And this other Koa has super tight curl in it, where it's just very uniform, tight curl that goes all the way through. It's really also very beautiful. But that's the cool thing about Koa. They're all so different. Every set, every piece you cut is so different versus the maple curls are pretty similar.
Sure.
They're still, each one is very special and beautiful in their own right. Mm-hmm. Like, don't get me wrong. I love maple as well. But, you know, sometimes I just feel like the Koa is just so varied in its beauty.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what I'm doing now. I'm doing one spec. It's just, and I don't think I'll make it a slot head. I think I'm just going to do a solid.
Yeah. And are your trips to Hawaii annual now?
This past year we didn't go, but yeah, we might.
Yeah.
I definitely wouldn't mind still going. And it's nice also now I've met more people and met more builders. And yeah, I can go show them some inlay. They can show me some things.
Do you get your Koa over there or do you have to buy it from over here?
It depends. I either do those trades or buy, you know,
yeah.
over there. But my dad just has a really nice collection of it mm-hmm. that he doesn't really use that much. So that's why I have a pretty humongous leg up on the Koa, because I can just go out in the garage get a piece that no one, you know, and just cut it up because nobody would even notice it's missing.
Yeah.
So a lot of it, he just has it. I think an instrument builder died in the maybe early 90s, maybe late 80s.
Okay.
And on his mail route.
Oh.
And he just asked the lady if he could take all of this, and he just went down the guy's basement. It was just all Koa.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What was the guy again? He was making ukes or something?
Furniture. I think he was making furniture.
Wow.
So I don't really know the whole of that story. I just know that
there's a lot of Koa there.
Yeah, there's a lot of Koa, and people like to provide my dad with things because they want to make him happy. And so.
You're making 12 instruments a year, which is like a lot of people I speak to are in that range. How the hell does your dad make so many guitars when there are all those people in his shop all day long?
He sleeps till noon and entertains till about 10 and then works till 4 in the morning.
And
he works hard.
Yeah. And are you a part of some of those midnight to 4 a.m. shifts?
I'm the opposite. I take first shift. I get up at 6 and work straight like from 6 till noon hard.
Yeah.
If I'm in his shop. Yeah. But I do it at my own. I'm just a morning person.
Yeah.
Which maybe suggests I'm not as creative, which I've read somewhere that only creative people stay up all night. But I do not.
Okay.
I'd work way better in the morning. I get up, I get my stuff done, and then around 3 I go for a run and clean my house, you know, do my wifely things, like take care of my house and cook and all those things that I love to do too. And go take my dog out to, you know, the trails that we like to run on, things like that. And so I'm a front loader. I get it all done in the morning, and then I have the afternoon, evening to hang out and go to sleep circa 9:30.
When do the 6 guys who are eating sandwiches come and watch you work? That doesn't happen?
I don't have as many. I mean, I have a few, and I like it. I do enjoy the company.
Okay.
But I'm not as giving as my dad with my time, where I'll just keep working.
Yeah.
And they can hang out, and I just say, here, well, I mean, if you want to help put on kerfing or something, I'll give you something very simple to do.
Sure.
But usually they just kind of hang out, and we'll talk, chat, and I'll just keep working.
Yeah.
But I really, I don't have as many, his folks.
He's got a lot of groupies.
Nobody takes any, you know, like migrations to my shop or whatever.
Not yet.
Pilgrimages.
Not yet.
Not yet. That's okay, though.
Yeah. Instagram, you mentioned.
Yep.
What's your...
It's...
Uh-oh, it's a quiz.
What is it? It's just EJ Henderson Guitars, I think. Is that right, Nick? Can you look it up? I don't really know.
Okay.
I have two, because I have my personal one. If you really want to see food and my dog, that one's Elizabeth J. Henderson. But
you got it right.
Is it right? Okay. So my actual, my Instagram with guitars is EJ Henderson Guitars.
Yep. And then you
and
got
then
Facebook.
Facebook is just EJ Henderson Guitars and Ukuleles. And my blog is The Luthier's Apprentice.
Which we share all the time.
Thank you.
Hopefully people listening to this.
I appreciate that so much. Because I don't know who reads it. I just, you know, send it out there when I think of it.
Keep it up. It's fantastic.
Good. I'm going to write about this.